A freak car accident left her crippled. But in an instant, a supernatural hand lifts her up and she is healed of 39 physical infirmities. Next on this edition of It's Supernatural. Hello, Sid Roth, your investigative reporter here with Gary DeStefano. And Gary, you are accident prone, but what happened to you shouldn't happen to anyone. I mean, you're driving your car and someone plows into you. How did this accident happen?
This happened in July of 1983. I was minding my own business, driving a Toyota Corolla through a very busy intersection in New York City, actually in Queens. And I was proceeding through a green light, just about to shift into third gear, so I was going about 20 miles an hour, and a 79 Cadillac broadsided me. She was going about 80 miles an hour.
What's the next thing you remembered?
Well, I stayed awake during the entire episode, and she embedded my car on hers, and at the last instant, when she realized that she was about to hit me, except that she had already hit me, she tried steering away. And at this point, she plowed my car head-on into other traffic that was standing at the light on the other side of the street. So my car was like this and then like that. And I stayed awake during the whole thing, sort of going in slow motion. And when the car stopped, it's not exactly like you see in the movies. There aren't people waiting in the wings to come out and take care of you and pull you out of the car. And this was at 5:20 in the afternoon. If you know anything about New York City, there's a lot happening at 5:20. Yeah, there's cabs and buses and trains and many, many people walking on the street. And it was as if time had stood still. The car stopped. I realized that I was probably dead because it felt like I had been ripped open. What happened is at the time of impact, I got thrown forward and my body broke in half from my neck down over the steering wheel on the right side. And I was a bodybuilder at the time, so I was very aware of my body, and it sounded to me as if, and felt as if, I had been ripped open. And I looked down expecting to see blood literally gushing from the front of my body. And when I looked down, I was wearing this very pretty yellow dress and there was not a drop of blood on the dress. So I immediately thought, well, they must clean you up before you go to the next place, wherever the next place.
You thought you were dead.
Well, I thought I was. By all rights, I heard two bones in my neck, you know, crack. I felt everything on the right side of my body go. My arm got caught because it was down at the shift. And as the car collapsed, my arm got caught between the steering wheel and the dashboard. And when I looked down, my arm was the same size as my leg. These two fingers were hanging off. This finger was hanging off. It was not pretty.
So now, when you say you thought you were going to the next place, out of curiosity, any idea where?
Well, I didn't think I was such a bad person, so I thought I was going to heaven. And then I felt heat, and I looked up, and there was fire. And so I thought, well, maybe I'm not going to where I thought I was going. And I realized, no, this is fire. I'm still in the car, and nobody's coming to help me get out.
So it wasn't hell. It was hell on earth. Car was on fire.
Yes. And, you know, you want to get out. You figure, you know, you see so much TV. The flames are traveling. It's a little car. It's even smaller now than when I had originally gotten into it. And it's going to hit the gas tank, and the whole thing's going to explode, and I'm going to die afterwards. And it just didn't seem right that I should live through the hard part and then get blown up. So I was on a mission to get out of the car. And being an athlete...
Now, why were you on a mission? Why was it difficult to just not just open the door and go out?
Well, the left side of my car was now in the middle of my car with
the
Cadillac.
Well, that would make it difficult.
Right, so that was not even a possibility. So since I was already halfway to the right side, I figured the right side is the way I should go. So I went to move to the right, and of course, with my clavicle split in half, it was kind of hard to maneuver, but I did get over there and couldn't get the door open. I did not realize that when the car had buckled, whatever parts of the car came in was keeping the doors from being opened on that side of the car. But I figured, no problem, I'll just jump over the back seat, I'll climb out another door.
Clavicle and all.
Well, I wasn't thinking that clearly, okay. I just wanted to get out of the car. And of course, as soon as I went to turn to get over the seat, that was not going to happen. Now I realized I was trapped. and still cannot understand why nobody was coming towards me.
The car's on fire?
Yeah, the whole front of the car is on fire. Well, adrenaline. That's a wonderful thing that happens in the body when you're under this kind of pressure. And all of a sudden, there was a reverse waterfall. And I had energy. I felt like I could move a train. I actually remembered reading of stories of where cars had rolled backwards on the driveways and the mother came running out and lifted the car off her kids. I pushed the door and moved it about 4 inches, grabbed my body because it was just hanging, and I squeezed out, ran around to the other side, and I was married at the time to an attorney, and he was unconscious during the whole accident. Opened the door. I was able to pry the door open from the outside, and he, like I said, was unconscious, so I picked him up. He was also a bodybuilder, and I carried him away from the car, thinking any minute the car is going to blow up.
I mean, in the natural, you should not have been able to do anything.
No.
All right, and okay, so you pull him away. Mm-hmm. Now what happens?
Well, he came to and asked me if I would kindly go back and get his briefcase, because he was an attorney and he needed that, and I just figured, okay. So off I went back to the car, thinking I'll pick up my pocketbook. Couldn't grab that because it was on the back seat. Got his little briefcase and decided everything is starting to collapse in my body. The adrenaline was ebbing away, and I needed to lie down. I just felt that I needed to lie down, and there was a lot of glass. Glass was everywhere on the street. And still aware that not one person had come to my rescue. Everything had stopped. People were watching, but nobody was coming towards me. So I only can imagine that I must have been moving at super speed, because in my mind it was taking forever. But I took his briefcase and I went to the sidewalk and I fixed my dress and I lay down.
You had enough presence of mind.
Yeah, I figured, you know, just look nice and just lay right down on the briefcase and just analyze what I was going to do next. And it was the first time in my life that I realized I wasn't in control, and I wasn't going
home. Well, you know
home.
What? The truth of the matter is, even if you're in control, you're really not in control. You don't understand what I'm talking about? Hang in there. We'll be right back, and I'll explain. Don't go away. Hello, Sid Roth, your investigative reporter here with Gary DeStefano. She just minded her own business, and a car plows into her. All of a sudden, the car's on fire. It's all bashed in. She can't get out. She finally gets out, the ambulance comes, takes you to the hospital. What happened?
I was in the trauma center for 36 hours. They were positive that I was going to have a heart attack. They did 3 EKGs. We determined within the next 10 hours that I had the entire window from my side of the car in my back. So that took another 10 hours to pull all the glass out of my back. And after the 36 hours when they became convinced I wasn't going to have a heart attack, they just threw me on a regular floor with a broken neck, all my ribs broken, a broken clavicle, the right arm useless, everything hooked up to the left arm. And they sent up the first meal, which was chicken on a bone. That was very exciting. And I realized it wasn't safe in this hospital. There was a team of doctors, all the heads of different departments, everybody arguing who was more important. One guy would come in and put something on me. The next one would come in and say, who put that on you? And I'm like, you're the doctors, I'm the patient. One of you figure it out. After 5 days of complete insanity, taking x-rays of the wrong side of my body, wrong medication, wrong everything, I got out of the hospital. It was now the weekend. I had to wait 2 more days and finally got to an orthopedic surgeon who examined me, took a few x-rays, and put a clavicular splint on me. And basically, that was the first glimmer of hope that I may even have some semblance of a normal body. Because at this point, after a week, my shoulder had completely collapsed inside my body, and this whole half of my body basically didn't exist. It had just kind of caved in.
And your body was very important to you. You were a bodybuilder.
I was a bodybuilder, and I had spent the previous year building up to a competition which was supposed to take place 2 weeks after this accident. And I was supposed to do very well in this competition, and I just was so devastated that my body was disappearing right before my eyes, and there was nothing I could do. Besides the bodybuilding, I played tennis, I roller skated, I rode a bicycle, I was an athlete, and I was very, very angry that somebody had done this to me, and just didn't seem like I would ever, you know, have a normal body again.
What's all this paraphernalia here?
Well, this is just some of the stuff that I had to endure during the recovery. When your neck is first broken, it's very swollen, so there's a thicker collar, mm-hmm. and then as the swelling goes down, they get thinner, and then this was the last one, if I recall. I had a clavicular splint on for most of the first year, and then after that came off, I had a back brace which had steel bars all through it. There's four steel bars, and if you could see, I'm not really a huge person, and this thing would just dig in, and uncomfortable doesn't even come close to it. And I was horizontal for almost 2 years.
Well, that sounds awful. Yes, you were an active person from what you tell me.
Yes, this was depressing, just demoralizing. It was humiliating. I couldn't do anything by myself. I couldn't get out of the bed by myself. I couldn't shower myself. I could not do anything by myself. But I just have a pretty strong willpower, and I determined that one way or the other, I was going to get out of this bed. And eventually, after about 2 years, I was able to get up. And at that time, we discovered that I had lost all the cartilage in both knees. And I don't know if you've noticed, but it's kind of difficult to walk or do steps or do anything without cartilage.
All right. I know the cane. Well, I know what that's for. What is this?
Well, when we discovered that I had no cartilage, the doctors decided they're going to put me in a wheelchair. Now, I had been in bed for 2 years. There was just no way I was getting in a wheelchair. So they fitted me for steel braces. You can now feel the weight of this baby. It's heavy. So what I had to do is I had to pop my kneecaps to the front of my foot, of my leg, so that I can slide these on. And they have nice hinges, so it helps you.
Okay, so you have all this paraphernalia.
Yeah.
By this point, you had gotten a divorce, and you decide, I know what I need. I need some sun and fun. I'm going to go to Florida. So she's laying out on the beach. She can't walk. No one knows this because she's just laying there. And a nice-looking guy says, let's go in the water. And what did you say to him?
I said, no, thank you. I just do sand. I do sun. I don't do water because there was no way I can get to the water. I had put all of this stuff in a bag.
So he turns out to be a masseuse. He starts giving you low-price massage. Why do you do low-price massages?
That's his ministry.
Really?
Yeah.
But I understand you got more than that. He started, as he's massaging you, what is coming out of his mouth?
Everything about Jesus, everything you wanted to know and especially didn't care about. He just did not stop.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, I'm Jewish, and I really didn't think that I was supposed to hear any of this, and it didn't have anything to do with my life.
So why'd you keep going back to him?
Well, he was a really good massage therapist, and I would go to sleep, figuring he'd just stop talking. And I would sleep, and I'd wake up, and he was still talking.
So you're still pretty messed up. You go back to New York, and all of a sudden, something hits you in your house or apartment. What hit you?
Well, what actually happened was I had just moved into an apartment and was bending down to pick up a box. And obviously, when you're not in good shape to begin with, there's no real correct way to bend. And I picked up this box, and I herniated a disc, which imploded inwards, paralyzing my sciatic nerve.
Just what you needed.
Why not? I had the left side, so now I have the right side is a mess. The left side is basically left me as a stroke victim. I could not lift this arm, the leg, my eye, everything on the left side of my body was destroyed.
Now, you were in that condition for, what was it, a few weeks till your parents came?
Right. I was in and out of consciousness for about 2 weeks. I had just moved to this apartment, no phone yet.
By yourself?
By myself.
That must have been awful.
It was horrendous. It was frightening. I remember cutting off all my hair because it had gotten so matted and knotted from the delirium that I was in. I don't remember eating. I don't remember much of anything except periodically waking up and wondering where I was and, you know, why nobody was looking for me. And I couldn't move. There was just no way for me to move.
So your parents came in, found you,
yes,
rehabilitated you a little, but you're
No.
Why?
They determined that I needed surgery, and I determined that the theory I had developed during the first time in the hospital was that the reason they called practicing medicine is because if they knew what they were doing, they would call it doing medicine. And I figured, this is my back. I'm not going to take any chances. I at least have half a side that's working, so we're not going to do that. I just wasn't going to have surgery. And since I could no longer take care of myself, we made a family decision that I was going to move back to Florida with them, and they were going to take care of me, and I would just do one step at a time. Definitely not surgery was never an option for me.
Be right back after this. Hello, Sid Roth, your investigative reporter here with Gary DeStefano. And this woman, I mean, she was, you were almost like a stroke victim. And tell me what was wrong with your body.
Okay, from the neck down, the two bones in the neck caused unbelievable pain because you're supposed to have a curve in your neck. The way the bones healed, they healed straight, so there was constant pressure. The clavicle came together. It took months and months for it to come together, but my shoulder healed, slanted down. The ribs came together. These two fingers never recovered. They had permanent nerve damage in them. The cartilage in my both knees were gone, so I wasn't able to walk without the braces and canes. After the herniated disc, this side was basically useless. It was just like not having a left-hand side. I had bursitis and arthritis in every joint.
That's enough. So you leave New York, you go to Florida. I mean, that's enough. You're going to get me depressed.
I'm sorry.
You go to Florida. What happened next?
I got to Florida, and I met another person that God put into my path, and his name was Peter. And he was a jeweler, and he convinced me that he had wonderful jewelry to show me, and the way to a girl's heart, you know, is jewelry. And so I followed him back to his place, and he left me standing in the middle of this room, and I noticed that you could not see the color of the carpet because of the amount of stuff that was on the floor, and it was all Jesus stuff. It was posters and tapes and Bibles, and I was just a little upset, to say the least, because I thought he had tricked me, just like the other one 8 years before. He came out with the jewelry. I wasn't interested at this point. I just wanted out of, you know, his presence. I said, look, I don't know what all this stuff is, but I'm not interested. I got this other maniac that's been talking to me for 8 years. I'm not interested in Jesus. I'm Jewish. I'm in a lot of pain. Go away. And as I was limping towards the door to get out of there, it occurred to me that I didn't have enough information to be this angry.
And that's an amazing thought.
Well, you know, I did go to college, so I figured.
Still an amazing thought. So what did you do?
I asked him for what he had read, and then my plan was I would read it and explain to him where he's gone astray, because I'm convinced that they're all crazy. And so he handed me a Bible, and it was a very basic Bible, no special writing, no concordance or any, you know, special information. It was just Genesis to Revelation, 948 pages. I figured I'd read it like a novel and be back to him in a week.
A week?
A week. I read a lot of books while I was crippled. So, you know, yes. You're laying in bed for 2 years, you read a lot. And so 948 pages was like a week's worth of reading. Well, I was reading and it was interesting, but it wasn't doing anything for my pain. And then one night, Peter invited me, after he told me he wasn't going to date me, now he invites me for a date. It was a trick to get me to this church. And I said, church? I'm Jewish. I don't even go to the temple. Why would I ever go to a church? And he said, it's a date. So, you know, I was desperate, so I went. And when we pulled up to this building, I saw hundreds of people literally being sucked into the side of the building. I was positive it was a cult. I thought there was some kind of tractor beam on the side of the building. If you got anywhere near the parking lot, they just get you in there. And I wasn't going to park in the parking lot. So we parked outside, and I limped in. And there was very young people there, huge amounts of people. Everybody had a lot of hair, very big hair in this church. And he sat me down next to a guy who had long blonde hair and was leaning over. And he had this denim jacket on. And on the back of the denim jacket was the biggest Jewish star. It had to be about this big. And in the points, the 6 points, there were pink sequined crosses. And then Jesus written in pink sequins right across the whole middle. That was it for me. I thought I was going to just lose my mind. I wanted out, and I couldn't get up. it was like my body became like lead. I could not get myself off the seat. So I just started crying.
Was it your physical infirmities that was doing it?
No, I don't know what
exactly
it was.
Something supernatural.
Something was sitting on me. And I didn't hear the music. I didn't hear the message. I just wanted out of this place so badly. You have no idea. Finally, the whole thing ended. We leave. And I just tell Peter, do not ever take me to this place again. I just felt like I should not be in a place like that. And along this time, I am getting worse and worse and worse. I can no longer sleep. I can't sit. I can't lie down. I obviously can't walk.
You wanted to even commit suicide.
That was the plan.
Okay, what happened?
Well, I made a plan to kill myself. I picked the date. And I had my gun out. I was saying goodbyes to people in my head. And I realized with the way things were going in my life that I would shoot myself, but I'd probably miss, and I would still be here and in worse shape than I already was. And so I decided to pray. And I could not say the prayer that everybody was trying to get me to say, this prayer of salvation, because I just didn't believe all the words, and I figured if this Jesus is really God, he's going to know I'm lying, and this is not a good way to curry favor.
I agree.
So they did tell me that he was merciful, and so my prayer basically was that he would kill me. My actual words were, Jesus.
Quickly, what happened?
If you're really God, then you know what I'm going to do. You do it. I give my life to you. Do with it what you will. Amen. A hand took my shoulder, lifted me straight up off the floor, and this surge came through my body, and just everything came out. And I was standing up and didn't know how I had gotten up, and I was testing my knees, jumping around the room, pinching myself.
What about your cartilage?
It's there.
It's missing.
No,
it's there. Where'd it come from?
The great physician.
You really believe?
I have no choice.
How many conditions were you healed of?
39. Took me 2 weeks to find
I them. Have no choice. And I say the same thing as to you. Whether you're sick or not, you're sick if you don't have intimacy with God. The only thing worth living for is intimacy with God. The only way is to tell God you're sorry for offending him. Believe the blood of Jesus washes away your sins. And just as Gary prayed, just an honest prayer, Jesus, help. Those two words, you can do it. Because I tell you, there is nothing that will bring, do you feel the peace? That's the peace of God that's flowing right through this television set, right into you. Someone's neck just got healed right now. That's God. I tell you, that is God. So good. He's so good. Gary, he's so good. God.
All the time.
Your breakthrough, it's right now. Click here to learn how to access heaven's treasury for your miracle. And I'll see you in the next video.